Well, good morning, friends and brethren. It's good to see you, good to be with each of you this morning. Good to have some visitors. We're especially glad to see you with us. You know, it was about a month ago that actually marked an anniversary. I'm not sure if all of you have kept up with that or not, but Joanne Moss certainly has, and she has reminded me 2 years in a row of my anniversary date with the church here. And it's not escaped me. I kind of have that in my mind as well. And I wanted to say something, but I was away in a meeting that weekend. In the last couple of weeks, I've been kind of pressed on time, and so I didn't take a moment to just say a couple things to you. Like, boy, 2 years sure has gone by fast. It's been a very busy time and period in our life, transition, and just the work here has just been very full and very busy in good ways. And we are happy that we are here. We are glad that we are working with the church here and hope that you are feeling the same way and hope that it's a relationship that will continue for some time. And as long as there's good that's being done and the Lord can be glorified by our work together. You know, it does not escape my mind that there are certainly other men that you could have considered for the work. And men that could have done a very good job and been a blessing to the church here. And I'm grateful that you've asked me to come and for Sandra and I to be with you and to work with you here. And I realize that in so many ways, I have felt as though I just don't have all that's needed, you know, to help the church here. And I scratch my head a lot thinking, you know, just where do I need to go next? And what do we need to teach next? And what kind of lessons need to be presented? And I feel like I always come up short. And but on the other hand, it just makes me work that much harder to try to have something to offer the church here that will be helpful and a blessing to you. You have learned well by now that I don't have all of the answers to all the issues of life. I don't have all the answers to questions that you might bring up regarding spiritual things. And I find myself deficient in those things quite often. But I sure appreciate your patience and your willingness to work with me when you can easily see my deficiencies. You've been very kind, and I appreciate that so much. I should say these things more often, just to let you know that I appreciate you and that we are glad to be here. Well, on this Lord's Day, I'd like us to turn to the book of 1 Samuel. It's where we were reading this week, those who are keeping up with our daily Bible reading. And I hope that's most of us. I wish I could say it was all of us. I hope it is. The reading, as it's progressing along this year, it's surprising to me that, well, I mean, here we are in April already. And here we are already to the book of 1 Samuel. The Bible story is just moving along into this time and period of the Judges. To me, it's one of the very interesting times of Bible history, in the history of the people, the children of Israel. Well, there's a character this week that was introduced to us that I want us to study and talk about just a little bit, and that's Eli. We'll be looking at 1 Samuel chapter 3. But we preface our study by saying some of these things. Raising children has never been easy. It never has been an easy task to raise children. From the first family recorded in history until now, being a parent is tough. And it doesn't always go the way that you would want it to go, and sometimes you have to deal with issues that you didn't think you would have to deal with. And the real challenge for us, even today as parents, is to know how and when to provide instruction that directs and corrects our children. But even if we do not get the timing right, we need to at least get this part right. We better make sure that we are actively teaching. Lessons learned from long ago can be helpful. And that's why we're going to spend a little time with Eli this morning. 1 Samuel chapter 3, verse 11. And the Lord said to Samuel, "See, I am about to go and do something to Israel that will make the ears of everyone who hears it tingle. At that time I will carry out against Eli everything I spoke against his family from the beginning to the end. For I told him that I would judge his family forever because of the sin he knew about. His sons made themselves contemptible, and he failed to restrain them. Well, as we think about the life and the story of Eli as we've read through this week, we're reminded that he was a man of God and that he listened to the words of God. In fact, he served God for many years and he died when he was old. And yet not all was well with Eli, for when he died, his family was a mess. And Eli was the one to be blamed. So severe were the transgressions of his sons that God promised a punishment on Eli's house. The text provides an analysis of the house of Eli and his leadership. And it's a commentary, really, a sad one about the house of Eli. But you know, there's more to the story. I mean, we just see this introduction here that God was angry. God was upset with the things that Eli had done, or perhaps more especially the things that Eli had not done in his house. Eli knew about the evil of his sons, the evil that they were committing. And yet he didn't respond. Chapter 2, at verse 22, beginning. Now Eli, who was very old, heard about everything his sons were doing to all Israel and how they slept with the women who served at the entrance to the tent of meeting. And so he said to them, "Why do you do such things? I hear from all the people about these wicked deeds of yours. No, my sons, it is not a good report that I hear spreading among the Lord's people. If a man sins against another man, God may mediate for him. But if a man sins against the Lord, who will intercede?" His sons, however, did not listen to their father's rebuke, for it was the Lord's will to bring them to death. What a sad commentary. I mean, we go from verse to verse. We're just getting some glimpses here of the life and times of Eli. We're getting the door opened a little bit now and getting a picture of his family, his sons, and the evil that they were all about. The sins of Eli's sons were known by all, and he failed to act. This becomes the real point of our lesson. The fact that here Eli was a father, and responsibility was given to him as being a father, and he failed to act, he failed to correct, he failed to punish. It was not a lack of understanding of God's expectations. Let's remember, he was high priest. He was in a position to have known and have studied the will and the word of God and would have understood responsibility given to fathers to lead and to teach their children. He was in a position to know God's law. And not only that, he was the judge of Israel. It was that time of the judges where God had appointed certain men from time to time to be the deliverers of the people of Israel, to give guidance and direction, to set the course. And so here was Eli, who was this judge of Israel, who was the high priest, one who understood and knew the law, and he was a father. But Eli's lack of restraint of his sons, well, it was not because he lacked authority. He was their father. He was the judge. He was the high priest. He had sufficient authority to punish these rebellious men who happened to be his sons. But he did not. Parents, there's something we might learn from this today. We can learn from this sad account. Christians should not assume that their children will grow up serving God. Just because we are trying to live faithful lives and be examples does not automatically mean that our children will serve God. We are tempted to think that our children will automatically be faithful to the Lord because they have grown up with godly parents, and yet that's just not always the case. And Eli's family proves that not to be the case. Incidentally, Eli's not alone in such a dilemma. Because as we go through the Bible story, we can see time and again others who had been godly parents, so far as we know, whose children did not follow in their ways. You know, Samuel's sons turned far away from the path that he had set. It's still here in 1 Samuel. We read about this week. In 1 Samuel chapter 8, if you look with me, Samuel, this prophet of God, who was so dedicated and focused to God, and yet his sons did not follow in his path. Chapter 8, verse 1, when Samuel grew old, he appointed his son as judges for Israel. The name of his firstborn was Joel, and the name of his second was Abijah, and they served at Beersheba. But his sons did not walk in his ways. They turned aside after dishonest gain and accepted bribes and perverted justice. Well, Samuel certainly would not have agreed with that. That was certainly not what they had learned from Samuel. But the point just being made, sometimes our children do not follow in the ways that we try to set, in the example that we may want to set for them. And Eli, or Samuel's sons, they sinned against God. But going back to Eli, our focus for the study, what is interesting and sad about Eli's home is there is no mention of training or instruction. As we read about the days and the time of Eli, training and instruction is an action that we must take. That's part of parenting. That's part of leadership in the home. In particular, fathers, that's the responsibility that God has shouldered with us. Some familiar passages to us. Deuteronomy chapter 6. Will you look with me? Deuteronomy chapter 6. Here's the instruction, reminder from Moses to the children of Israel about the responsibility, fathers, that we must carry. Verse 4, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your house and on the gates. He is trying to remind the children of Israel, fathers, the responsibility of telling and teaching your children about God is shouldered on you to think about these things. In the New Testament, we find the same thing. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4. The Apostle Paul writing to Christians just like us. Ephesians 6, verse 4. And you, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. What stands out so strongly in the passage is that there is training. There is admonishing that must be done. Here is an active intercourse that must be taking place between fathers and children to bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. In Colossians chapter 3 at verse 21, fathers, do not provoke your children lest they become discouraged. Instruction has to come across in such a way as to not tear down or to bring down the children, but instead to lift them up to things that are greater, to bring them closer to God. That's the responsibility of parenting. And training does not happen automatically. It's something that we have to work diligently about, and we have to take it seriously. You know, we understand that in every other aspect of life, it seems, you know, that there is diligent effort required in gaining some new abilities or learning things that are different to us. The same is true in learning the ways that God would demand us to live. There's going to be some effort involved. There has to be desire, and there has to be an effect that comes from that. And we understand that if we think about school and if we desire to get a degree, there's going to be some work involved. We're going to have to apply ourselves in a diligent way. In the workplace, if we want to progress into a different place, a different position, there's some work. There has to be desire to improve ourselves in some way to accomplish this effect. We get that. I mean, we understand that. Even in recreation, it's that way. We for sure get that part. You know, I've noticed around here that there's quite a few places you can go and play ball. You know, there's a lot of little league ball fields and stuff like that in different places. It was like that where we moved from too. Marshall County, Tennessee, I mean, it's not just a great big place, but there sure is a lot of ball fields. I mean, like really nice ball fields. People spend an incredible amount of time manicuring these ball fields for Little League. And I'm not talking about three or four fields. I'm talking about four or five complexes across the county that have four or five fields each, all of them lit with beautiful green grass. And in the spring and summer months, it's like every night of the week, those fields are filled up with practice and training and games that are taking place, hours spent in practice. Coaches that demand attentiveness and discipline. And if you are not keen on those things, understand you will not play the game. I mean, it's just that way. It is that discipline. And parents sacrifice their time and money to ensure the greatest chance of success. You want to be a great ball player? Well, you got to be at practice every time. And when you get home, practice some more. And you have to be disciplined in these things. And disappointment is high in some families. Let me tell you. When their child does not progress as far as they think that he should and does not live up to his full potential, there is great disappointment in the family. We've seen that. We've experienced that. And it's been kind of hard to figure out how to deal with sometimes when life is wrapped around Little League baseball. Well, there's been some success that has come by those that have been very diligent. I mean, there's been a number of state titles and national titles, even won from Marshall County, Tennessee, of all things. And even some who have made it to the minor leagues and even to the major leagues. People call that great success. But you know a real critical point? I don't know of any instances where all that ball practice produced children who became Christians. I mean, really. Now, I've known some Christians who had children who were in ball, and there were some who came out, and spiritually they were fine. But I sure have seen a number who were involved with ball every night a week and Saturday, who have now, as their children are grown and have moved away in some cases, who want nothing to do with the Lord, and the parents are going, what did we do wrong? Can we make a point out of this? You know, children need to be raised in the Lord. And God gave responsibility to parents to teach and to nurture. And fathers especially carrying that responsibility. And if we would put in the kind of time that we put into recreation, into training and teaching our children, admonishing and correcting and disciplining our children concerning things spiritual and godly living, you know, our success rate in raising godly children might be increased dramatically. It's something for us to think about. You know, we need to know something about the danger of squandered authority. That is, authority that is not used but just thrown away. We can understand in so many aspects of life, whether it's dealing with the community or at work or in school, how there's a need of authority and that discipline must be used and thought. Our society is crumbling around us because of lack of discipline. Well, it's happening in the homes as well. Authority that is not used, that is thrown away, is authority that is wasted in training that is just left to the side. We're going to Deuteronomy again, this time chapter 13. Deuteronomy chapter 13, where, you know, Moses has something really important to say about those who would turn away from God and those who would think about false gods. Deuteronomy chapter 13, we begin at verse 6. It says, if your very own brother or your son or daughter or the wife you love or your closest friend secretly entices you, saying, let us go and worship other gods, gods that neither you nor your fathers have known, gods of the peoples around you, whether near or far, from one end of the land to the other. Do not yield to him or listen to him. Show him no pity, Do not spare him or shield him. You must certainly put him to death. Your hand must be the first in putting him to death, and then the hands of all the people. Stone him to death because he tried to turn you away from the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. Then all Israel will hear and be afraid, and no one among you will do such an evil thing again. Well, that sounds pretty drastic, isn't it? I mean, that's pretty severe. But this was God's punishment for those who would try to turn others away by using false gods. There's a powerful point that's being laid out before us here. That there can be nothing in our life that is of greater value or more important to us than serving God. And even if it's our best friend, our husband or our wife or our children, who have no interest in God and who try to even steer us away, there has to be action that's taken. We can learn a principle from that even today. Now, I don't know in our text back in 1 Samuel chapter 2, I don't know if that is what Eli's sons were trying to do directly, but they were greatly perverting God's law. That much we know for certain. Because chapter 2 and verse 17, it says to us, the sin of the young men was very great in the Lord's sight, for they were treating the Lord's offering with contempt. They were not considering the Lord's will. Well, not only not considering his will, they didn't care what the Lord's will was. Something in the sin of these men was so great, it caused other men to abhor the offering to God. It had an influence or effect on others. And furthermore, in verse 22, it indicates that there was more to the problem here. Now Eli, who was very old, heard about everything his sons were doing to all of Israel, how they slept with the women who served at the entrance to the tent of meeting. Now we add to this sexual immorality. And it was not something to be hidden, but the sins of these men were well known. And God summed it up well. You honor your sons more than me. See, part of the problem with Eli was it seems as though he forgot about his place or position before God. And we can all do that sometime. And when he failed to deal with his sons and their sins, it was as though he was honoring them more than he honored God. With such grievous crimes being committed, even in the shadow of the tabernacle, wouldn't it have been right for those men to have been stoned by the Mosaic law? Indeed, that's what the law said. And Eli was high priest. He was supposed to know what the law said. And he was the judge of Israel, the one indeed that had the authority and the right to have ordered such a thing. At the very least, Eli should have removed his sons from being priests because they were so corrupt. I don't know if it was just the family relationship that got in the way. It sure seems to be that. Family relationships versus duty to God. Sometimes we get kind of stuck on that, don't we? I mean, when you put family relationships in here, and there are some problems, and there are those who are not living as they should, and there's sin that's taking place, you know, sometimes that's just harder to deal with. Maybe it shouldn't be. In fact, maybe those should be the relationships we would care about the most, and we would want to make correction because we love them so much because of the family relationships. But what happens so often is there are some sins that sometimes some want to overlook because of family relationships. We need to see the danger of putting family relationships in front of duty to God, still in chapter 2 and in verse 29. Why do you scorn my sacrifice and offering that I prescribe for my dwelling? Why do you honor your sons more than me by fattening yourselves on the choice parts of every offering made by my people, Israel? God was upset. He was upset with Eli. He was upset with his sons. He was totally put off because of their sins and the effect, the influence that they had had on so many others. Even the sacrifices brought to the priests to be offered, they were not handling those right. Again, it was an abomination in the eyes of God. And he's basically saying to Eli, why are you letting this happen? Why do you honor your sons more than you honor me? Discipline is not easy. Discipline is not easy. And it can be hard to condemn the actions of those we love. Sometimes it's hard to deal with the actions of our children when we know that they are wrong. But real love will cause us to correct them. Will cause us to correct our children. Any who choose not to walk with God, we cannot ignore the sins of our children. And to overlook their sins is to ignore the teaching of God. To overlook their sins is to love them more than we love God. And we can see God took issue with that. In our reading this week as well, in the same book, is that of Hannah and her prayer to have a son. And even before she was given a son, she had promised to God, dedicated her son to God. And it had to be hard when she was blessed with a son. It must have been hard, heartbreaking even, to see Samuel turned over to the high priest, Eli, when he was such a little boy. But she put her duty to God above family relationships. She didn't lose a relationship with her son. She just didn't have him with her all the time. And she would go and she would visit every year, and always encouraged his work for God. And so you think now, how could it have been so different if Eli had followed Hannah's example and placed God in priority in his family? It's a reality check for us. It should be a reality check that we need to examine ourselves and see if we've been putting family relationships over duty and responsibility to God. Because it can happen so easily and so quickly. But there is no greater relationship than our relationship to God. It should never be family relationships versus duty to God. Never should that be an issue. But always our duty in relationship to God is most important. It is paramount. Blood runs thick, we say sometimes, but God has to be first in our lives. You know, we talk about a real family relationship. You know, in Romans chapter 8, Romans chapter 8, we look there for a moment. Romans chapter 8, and beginning at, let's begin here at verse 12. Romans chapter 8, beginning at verse 12, we are reminded here that our family relationship is with God. Therefore, brethren, we are debtors not to the flesh to live according to the flesh. For if you live according to the flesh, you will die. But if you through the Spirit put to death the deeds of the body, you will live. For as many as are led by the Spirit of God, these are sons of God. For you have not received the spirit of bondage again to fear, but you have received the spirit of adoption, by whom we cry out, Abba, Father. The Spirit himself bears witness with our spirit that we are children of God. And if children, then heirs, heirs of God, and joint heirs with Christ, if indeed we suffer with him, that we may also be glorified together. Have we got that family relationship with God understood? I mean, did the text tell us enough that we would be people of God if we are in fact devoted to him? We are his children. That's the family relationship that should be paramount. That would mean more to us than anything. And from Eli, we should learn something about the foolishness of ignoring God. Eli ignored repeated warnings. Our text again in 1 Samuel chapter 2. Eli was told of judgment that would come against him because of these matters. Chapter 2, we begin reading at verse 27. Now, a man of God came to Eli and said to him, "This is what the Lord says. Did I not clearly reveal myself to your father's house when they were in Egypt under Pharaoh? I chose your father out of all the tribes of Israel to be my priest, to go up to my altar, to burn incense, to wear an ephod in my presence. I also gave your father's house all the offerings made with fire by the Israelites. Why do you scorn my sacrifice and offering that I prescribed for my dwelling? Why do you honor your sons more than me by fattening yourselves on the choice parts of every offering made by my people Israel?" Verse 30. "Therefore the Lord, the God of Israel, declares, 'I promised that your house and your father's house would minister before me forever, but now the Lord declares, far be it from me. Those who honor me I will honor, but those who despise me will be disdained. The time is coming when I will cut short your strength and the strength of your father's house, so that there will not be an old man in your family line, and you will see distress in my dwelling. Although good will be done to Israel, in your family line there will never be an old man. Every one of you that I do not cut off from my altar will be spared, only to blind your eyes with tears and to grieve your heart, and all your descendants will die in the prime of life.' And what happens to your two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, will be a sign to you. They will both die on the same day. I will raise up for myself a faithful priest who will do according to what is in my heart and mind. I will firmly establish his house, and he will minister before my anointed ones always. Then everyone left in your family line will come and bow down before him for a piece of silver and a crust of bread and plead, 'Anoint to me some priestly office so I can have food.'" What the Lord has said is going to come upon Eli is catastrophe in his family line. Because he had veered so far away from the will of God, and he had not called his sons, and his sons had done these horrible things, and that he had not corrected them. This judgment came because Eli did not honor God, but held his sons in higher reverence than he held God. Chapter 3, verse 11. "And the Lord said to Samuel, 'See, I'm about to do something in Israel that will make the ears of everyone who hears it tingle. At that time, I will carry out against Eli everything I spoke against his family from beginning to end. For I told him that I would judge his family forever because of the sin he knew about. His sons made themselves contemptible, and he failed to restrain them.'" It was a price to pay. Because Eli was not the high priest, he was not the judge, and he was not the father that God demanded that he should be. Verse 18, "So Samuel told him everything, hiding nothing from him, and Eli said, 'He is the Lord. Let him do what is good in his eyes.'" You see, there was still that part of Eli that he knew and he recognized God and revered him. But somewhere along the way, his eyes had become clouded. And he was not making the judgments that he needed to make. And even within his own family, his sons, he was not able to deal with their sins. It wasn't that he couldn't see them. He identified them. He even said to them, "Why don't you stop?" But they didn't, and he didn't restrain them. He did not stop them, and he was the one who should have done that. But it's not just about Eli. Eli becomes the story for us. He becomes the example for us. But we need to be honest. We need to look at ourselves to see if we have been ignoring God's repeated warnings about sin in our own lives. God's repeated warnings about sin in our life. For the wages of sin is death. Romans 6:23. There's a price to pay if we ignore God's will in our lives. And there are consequences for sin. There always is. So it leaves us some things to think about. Lessons that we should learn about leading our families. Think about these things. Eli failed in teaching a love and respect of God to his sons. What are we teaching our children? What are we teaching our children about loving God and respecting Him? Are we involved with our children, not just in fun and recreation, but are we more importantly involved in teaching them and leading them and guiding them in the way of godliness? Failure to teach and to guide and discipline the ways of God will have its effects. It always does. And none of it will be good, and it stands to end in a catastrophic way. Eli did not exercise his God-given authority leading his sons. Parents, fathers especially, we need to learn and listen from Eli's mistakes. Have we accepted the authority given to us as parents to adjust inappropriate lifestyles in our family? When our children are not being what they should be, are we taking the responsibility serious to adjust and to correct, to instruct? To correct and discipline is an effort to turn our family away from evil. And no doubt, free will be exercised by all. And some will disobey God by their own choice, no matter how we try to influence them. But failure to correct and discipline is blame that will fall back on us. And so parents, we need to understand and accept the responsibility of teaching, leading, training. Eli did not restrain his sons, and they continued to walk in an uncorrected life by the one who should have had the most influence on them. It should have been Eli who could have instructed them. We should learn from Eli's mistake. Or have we allowed family relationships to somehow cloud our vision of a relationship with God? Have we let family relationships become more important than our family relationship with God, being His heirs, His children? Do we let spending time with family override spending time with God? We struggle with this sometimes. Family is important. Blood runs thick. I get it. And sometimes it's easy to let family concerns override somehow things that God would expect us to do in His service. Sometimes we are challenged to choose between God and the decisions of the family. And it'll always be the wrong decision to spend time just doing what family wants to do when we fail to do what God wants us to do and to worship Him as He would want. And when vacation time away provides for some great family time, but no time is planned to serve God and remember Him and worship God, we've made the wrong choice then. When somehow going away on vacation means a vacation from God, we think somehow that doesn't affect our relationship with God. We think somehow that the children will not notice that. Oh, we've sinned a powerful, we've taught a lesson. We've taught a powerful lesson, but it's the wrong lesson. And when family stops in on the weekend, I hear this from folks from time to time. Family stops in on the weekend, and sometimes we can't make it to Bible studies or worship because we had company. Boy, we've made the wrong choice. We've misunderstood our family relationship with God. And we've let blood that runs thick somehow cloud our mind in the relationship that we should have with God. And we've taught the wrong things to our children. When we overlook the sins of loved ones and we ignore how God wants us to respond as a family, as fathers, and making corrections sometimes when it's needed, when we have allowed family ties to obstruct our view of God's will, then we've done the wrong thing. It'll never turn out good. Do we let family relationships have a greater priority in our life than a relationship with God? If we've done that, or if we do that, as Eli can confirm for us, it will never work out for good. And the end can be catastrophic. Eli put family relationships in front of his devotion to God and repeatedly ignored God's warning. His actions were not a blessing to his family, but a curse. You see, there's lessons we can learn from Eli. From these stories of old, from these Bible characters of so long ago, there are lessons that we can learn that are powerful lessons. This much for sure, that God wants us to obey him more than anything. And that he has made his will known to us. But it will be ours to choose how we respond to him. And we will all respond to him in this life. We will respond by choosing to be faithful to him, by pledging our allegiance to him and living in such a way that our allegiance is known, or we will choose to walk away from him. We will all make choices in this life how we stand before God in the final day. What will you choose? Even today, what will you choose? What is your relationship before God even today? Something serious for us to think about. And there could even be today those who are thinking about their need of responding to the call of Christ, the call of the gospel. Becoming a child of God through baptism. Or even one who is a Christian who has struggled and is needing encouragement. One who has fallen to sin. But ready to repent and pray forgiveness. If we can help you some way in your relationship with God, would you come forward and let that be known as we stand and sing.